From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. We've got a great show for you today. We really do. Mark Halperin of Time Magazine, co-author of the new book, A Game Change, will be on to explain why his book traffics in such trashy, embarrassing political gossip, and also why there wasn't more of it. But first, this week, as some people noted, marked the one-year anniversary of Barack Obama's inauguration. Remember all that hope and change? Well, things have gone downhill since then. And Obama is trying to recapture the magic of his campaign, and he's figured it out. He is going to resign his office and run an insurgent outsiders campaign for the presidency in 2012. The slogan will be, "No, actually, we can't, but we might later."
That's a brilliant strategy.
Don't you think?
You're saying he might be moving the entire presidency to 10 p.m.
Why not? It's a daring move, yeah. But it will be less expensive.
And it can work.
Can you do it? Give us a call. Show us. Call us up. Answer some questions about the week's news. The number, as always, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Doug from New York City.
Hey, Doug, how are you?
Doing great.
I'm glad to hear it. What do you do there in that beautiful city?
I am CFO of an environmental startup company.
An environmental startup company?
Yes.
Does that mean
isn't that kind of a dirty place to be doing environmental stuff?
Yeah, I'm trying to change the whole city.
You're going to clean up
really?
The whole city.
Good right. luck. That's great. So do you have some ingenious environmental idea?
It really is.
Wow.
I can't talk about it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. Oh, no one's listening anyway.
We're not going to tell.
Then, believe me, everybody who's listening, they're actually doing something else. They're washing their cars. Nobody's paying attention. All right, Doug, welcome to the show. Let me introduce you to our panel. First, say hello to a humorist and the author of the new book, Driving Like Crazy, Mr. P.J. O'Rourke.
Doug, how are you?
Hi, P.J.
Yeah.
Next, the woman behind the advice column, Ask Amy, and author of the memoir, The Mighty Queens of Freeville, Ms. Amy Dickinson.
Hey.
Hi, Amy.
Hi.
And finally, a writer for HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, Mr. Adam Felber.
Hey, Doug. Hey, how are you?
Doug, we're glad to have you, and we have invited you here to play a new game. This week, we're calling it...
Carl's Dream Journal.
Ever since Carl Castle quit getting up early to do the newscasts, it has had an interesting effect on his sleep. Right, Carl?
Peter, I haven't had dreams like this since I was following the Grateful Dead back in 67.
So Carl is going to describe three of his strange dreams for you right now. Your job, explain who or what inspired it. Two times out of three, do that, you win our prize. Ready to go?
Yes.
All right, Carl, what did you dream of first?
Well, I'm in Massachusetts, and I'm naked. And I'm driving a pickup truck, and Ted Kennedy steps into the street. And I swerve to get around, and I run over the Attorney General, Martha Coakley.
So who was Carl in that dream?
I'm guessing Scott Brown.
Yes, Scott Brown, of course. He is the new star of the Republican Party. Massachusetts State Senator Scott Brown won the Senate seat held by Ted Kennedy for 40 years and JFK before him. Brown is a handsome Republican. He's a former centerfold model. He was losing by 10 points just a month ago and then had this historic victory. This will cause a sea change in American politics. As both parties start leafing through Playboy and Playgirl, they'll say, oh, no, we're just reading it for the candidates. Now, his upset victory was credited in part to his opponent, Martha Coakley. Experts agree she was the least charismatic Democratic Senate candidate since Mel Carnahan in 2000, and he was dead. And he won anyway. Now, despite this victory, Republicans have a problem. They still don't have a national leader. And that is a problem because now the Democrats don't know exactly to whom they should surrender.
Well, you know, there's that fond dream now that someday, far in the future, maybe the Democrats will have majorities in both the House, Senate, and be in the White House.
No, it couldn't happen.
Clearly it's not happening now, but someday, maybe.
Liberals, of course, are disgusted with the congressional Democrats, and they've started a movement to elect somebody with more guts, say, any random Girl Scout troop. The French army, or actual lemmings.
Yeah.
Because they, when they run, they run.
They do.
Unlike Martha Goldberg, who just sort of sat there. Yes.
Lemmings waiting for a rock to fall on them.
So, Carl, what strange vision came to you next?
It was so weird, Peter. Harry Reid was sweating Gatorade. Mitch McConnell telling me he was less filling and tasted great. And then Barack Obama and Nancy Pelosi appeared sitting next to each other in separate bathtubs. I woke up screaming.
Carl might have been dreaming about a Supreme Court decision determining that who could spend whatever they want on campaign ads.
Corporations.
Exactly right. For years, corporations and unions both were prevented from funding political ads directly. Not anymore. In a 5-4 reversal of previous rulings, the court found that corporations were, legally anyway, people, and their free speech cannot be limited. Asked for comment, ExxonMobil said it was excited, a little overwhelmed, and to celebrate was going to go buy itself a little treat, namely the U.S. House of Representatives.
But, you know, I was thinking about this when I heard about this, and I thought of, you know, naturally you want to pair up the product with the candidate, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Who would sponsor, like, Nancy Pelosi?
Botox? Pepsodent. Nancy Pelosi, brought to you by Botox.
Yeah. Well, we actually thought about this. As you say, these companies can bring all the expertise they've built up doing actual ads to political ads. So imagine, like, Nike Democrats with the slogan, "Just talk about it." Or a new campaign for, quote, "Republicans, the other white meat."
You know, I think they ought to just cut out the, you know, as long as this decision has been made, it's time to buy any national candidate like one of those NASCAR-style jumpsuits.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, why settle for one sponsor? It takes a village of corporations.
That's
to
true.
Sort of, like,
right, you're going to need the patches.
You got to wear it. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Oh,
maybe they'll just start
idea.
Selling parts of the Congress like they do on, you know, like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, all those shows. Like, use your AT&T, you know, so it'll be like, I rise and walk up to the J. Smith Furniture Podium.
Right.
You know?
We recognize the gentleman from Stridex.
Exactly. Carl, did you have one more dream before you woke up?
This was terrifying, Peter. I'm like Pinocchio, only with every bad joke, my chin gets bigger and bigger. It gets so big, I'm knocking stuff over. I knocked this red-headed guy right out of the building.
So, who was Carl dreaming about?
Jay Leno.
Yes. The great late-night war of 2010 has ended, with Conan O'Brien accepting a rumored $45 million for himself and his staff to stop hosting The Tonight Show, which is slightly less, by the way, than the $50 million Carl got to stop doing the newscasts. Jay gets to go back to The Tonight Show, and Conan will be able to start a show on another network someday, although he had to leave his signature bits behind. NBC owns these things. They're going to put them to good use. Triumph the Insult Comet Dog will star in Law and Order Special Unit for Me to Poop On.
I just realized that if corporations are people, NBC was my first wife.
Is that how she broke it to you, PJ? She says, well, I want to see you, but only after midnight, she said. After everybody's asleep, then.
Especially her.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to move you back a few hours when you've already fallen asleep.
Carl, how did Doug do?
Doug had 3 correct answers, Peter, so he wins our prize.
Well done. Congratulations. Thanks so much for playing, Doug.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Adam, let's get back to Scott Brown for a second. During his nationally televised victory speech on Tuesday evening, he made a surprising offer to the nation. What did he offer the viewers?
To drive them around in his pickup truck?
No, he pointed out that if viewers wanted, they could have something. Because
something
they were available.
Comely.
Oh, his daughters.
Yes, his daughters.
Yes, he offered his daughters, yes.
He did. He pointed at his 2 daughters, Isla, 21, and Ariana, 19, and said, quote, "Just in case anybody is watching throughout the country, yes, they're both available."
Whoa, that's sad.
Nothing like having your dad pimp you out.
Yes. Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
Thanks, Dad.
Yeah. Thanks, Dad.
Hi, America.
Awesome.
Thanks, Dad.
Hello.
This does explain how we got elected. It totally beat Martha Coakley's offer. She said if you voted for her, you could come over and take care of her cat. Ariana, his daughter, corrected him. She's taken, she said, as she was promised to Satan in the deal that got him the Senate seat.
Come now, Peter. Come. When we Republicans sell our soul to Satan, we get the presidency.
Anyway, Brown then reiterated to the TV camera, well, no, just Isla. Isla's looking for a date. And she did not care much for this, but she has said that since that night she has gotten 1,000 requests for dates, 200 of which were from John Edwards. So, hey,
Mrs. Brown, you've got a lovely daughter. Girls as sharp as her are something rare. But it's sad.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks so much. Thanks, everybody. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Sarah Chandler, and I'm calling from our nation's capital.
Oh, Washington, D.C. Are you part of the permanent government there?
I am not, but I am married to someone with the State Department.
Oh, you really? And is that fun? He works down at Foggy Bottom? Is that what they call it? Foggy Bottom?
Yes, Foggy Bottom.
Foggy Bottom.
We've actually been abroad most of the last 10 years, and we are new residents of the district.
Oh, really? And how do you find it?
It's really nice. We like it quite a lot.
I'm glad to hear it. Well, welcome to the show, Sarah. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Sarah's topic?
Now that's service.
Like any industry, the hospitality business is super competitive, with hotels trying to outdo each other in the quest to provide the most luxurious accommodations and services. This week, we read about a new amenity being offered that is sure to bring in the tourists. Choose the true story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
I am ready.
First, let's hear from Adam Felber.
As everyone knows, casual romantic hookups at tropical resorts carry one terrifying risk, having to share your breakfast. But now, Cabo San Lucas's Inspirations Beach Resort has solved the problem. The singles-oriented resort now offers discrete in-room motion sensors to determine if you are entertaining a guest after midnight. If you are, the staff will quietly bring a cart to your door laden with chocolates, wine, an extra bathrobe, and an artfully arranged contraceptive assortment. Should your guest stay the night, a champagne breakfast will arrive at your door in the morning, free of charge. It's like George Orwell meets Larry Flint. Inspiration's manager Brian Bailey downplays the Big Brother aspect and says so far the response has been overwhelmingly positive. Quote, you're basically tying an electronic necktie to your doorknob, he says, but then your roommate brings eggs.
They know if you are sleeping and with how many other people at a resort in Cabo San Lucas. Ooh. The next little chocolate on your pillow comes from PJ O'Rourke.
The Life to the Fullest Spa in Sedona, Arizona, is devoted to extreme physical fitness. And it has a hotel amenity I bet you never thought of. What is the problem with spa resorts? You don't really get any exercise. You even gain weight. I mean, sure, there's a gym. Sure, there's a pool. But you end up lolling on the king size, hoovering the mini bar, and watching pay-per-view. Not if there are snakes in your room. Now, the snakes are harmless blue racers, but they get guests off their butts and outdoors. Life to the Fullest super wellness coach, Clarissa Steinberg, says snakes cause a healthy increase in heart rate and produce adrenaline, which helps burn calories. Plus, they motivate even the most out of shape to run at marathon-winning speeds. Not all the rooms have snakes all the time, says Steinberg. As a holistic approach to fitness, snakes work best when they're a surprise.
Snakes in a hotel room. Your last story of a hotel treating its guests like royalty comes from Amy Dickinson.
Okay. You're on a business trip, staying in one of those, you know, anonymous chain hotels near the airport, and you think to yourself, sure, I love the teeny tiny little soaps all wrapped up in paper, the little mint on the pillow, the toilet sanitized for my protection, but Brr. That first hop into those cold sheets sure is a bummer. Well, a Holiday Inn in Manchester, England has solved that little problem. They're offering a bed warmer made out of an actual human being. That's right. The hotel will send a person dressed in a onesie to your room to lie in your bed, warm it up, and hop out just before you get in. But think about it. The bed warmer is the perfect hotel quickie. And you don't even have to spring for a cocktail, suck in your gut, or say you'll call in the morning. A spokesperson for the hotel chain compared the human bed warmers to having a giant hot water bottle in your bed. Yeah, if the bottle is 6'3", named Bart, and may or may not have had the baked beans for dinner.
So let's review your choices. A hotel somewhere is offering one of these amenities. Was it from Adam Felber? Sensors at a singles resort that tells the hotel if you got lucky, and so they can provide the amenities to go with that. From PJ O'Rourke, a spa that puts snakes in some rooms just to get people up and moving. Or from Amy Dickinson, a hotel in England that cares about you so much they'll send somebody up to jump in your bed and roll around to warm it up for you. Which of these is the real story that we saw in the week's news?
Well, I've got nothing against snakes.
You got nothing against snakes?
Nothing at all. And as someone who most recently was living in China, I can sort of understand the Big Brother aspect of Adam's story.
Okay.
But I'm going to go with choice number 3, the bed warmers.
Really? You believe that one? You're going to go with Amy's story of the bed warmers. Okay.
There's a reason that I get in bed second when my husband and I go to bed at night.
All right.
That appeals to
me. So this appeals to you. That's fine. That's a good reason to pick it. Well, we were actually lucky enough to speak to a representative for the hotel offering this amenity.
They get into the bed, roll around the bed, warm up the bed, and then they get out before the guest gets in.
That was Eleanor Conroy, spokesperson for Holiday Inn in the UK. Congratulations, Sarah. You got it right. You've earned a point for Amy for simply telling the unbelievable truth, but you believed it, so you have won our prize, Carl Castle's voice in your home answering machine.
Right.
Well done.
Thank you.
Congratulations, Sarah. Thanks so much for playing with us today.
Thank you.
And now the game where we bring on somebody who knows everything and we find out how true that is. It's called Not My Job. Mark Halperin has been a political reporter all his life. These days he does it for Time magazine. But he's also the co-author with John Heilemann of the new book, Game Change. It's all about the backbiting, sex, lying, and anger that was the 2008 presidential campaign. The book reads like a season of Survivor with the winner getting control of a nuclear arsenal. Mark Halperin, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
That's exactly.
Isn't it true? Am I right? I mean,
that's exactly how we conceived of the book. So.
Really? Yeah. It's great. Now, it's a little bit like that because you start off with this cast of motley characters, all the candidates, and one by one they drop out, backbiting and vicious infighting, and the last guy left gets to be president.
That is pretty much the way the founders envisioned the process working.
Yes. Now, there is so much gossip in the book, and we're appalled, which is why we're going to talk to you about it at length. But how do you react to the criticisms we've heard from some quarters that this is just too gossipy, not substantive enough, and why are we indulging in all this muck?
Well, I don't think of it as muck and gossip, actually. I think of it as the real story of what happened in this campaign. It was the story behind the story of the candidates and in many instances, their spouses, the stories of their lives were intersected with what we saw in the public realm. So we included only things that we thought were deeply woven into the fabric of the narrative and of the personalities.
Right. So
and the fact that a bunch of idiocy happened to be deeply woven into the narrative was bonus, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, not just bonus, but why we thought we could write the book. Because these were not, you know, this was not Dick Lugar and John Kerry and Lamar Alexander. These were not just interesting people, but famous people, more just as likely to be on People magazine or Oprah.
Right.
As they were to be on Time or Newsweek.
I'm sorry, did you just use John Kerry as an example of an interesting person?
No, just the opposite.
Oh, I see. Okay.
The clue was I grouped him with Dick Lugar and Lamar
Alexander. Right, right. I was puzzled.
You don't know about Peter's charter membership of the Dick Lugar fan club.
did you?
The poster on his wall.
You and your co-author obviously like every political journalist, was covering the election. Did you know all this stuff while it was happening and we're sitting around going, I can't wait till it's all over and we can publish this stuff?
Not any of it. We would sit in these interviews, which we did some during the campaign year, but most immediately after the election. And we were at once exhilarated for learning all this new stuff and feeling like knuckleheads, like we were covering the campaign with bags over our heads, because we thought we were paying pretty close attention, and we missed almost everything that's in the book.
Wow, really?
Wow. Hey, Mark, can I ask you a question?
Okay.
Okay, so I'm an advice columnist, and I haven't read your book yet or seen the Lifetime movie of it. So can you give me, like, what's the juiciest spouse stuff?
Don't spoil the ending, Mark.
What's the juiciest, like, spousal stuff you got?
Well, there's one scene where one candidate is angry at the spouse and engages in an 11-word sentence. 10 of the words are the same word, and it begins with the letter F.
And that story, I should just say, for those who haven't read the book, was about John McCain.
It's incredible the amount of fighting that the McCains and John and Elizabeth Edwards would do in front of the staff. And these poor staffers are trying to, like, you know, think about high principles, and instead they're turning their heads away while the principals are having these incredibly roiling fights with profanity laced and often leaving them late for the next event.
So there's been a lot of discussion in the media about your sourcing, and you've said everything was in deep background, so you're not going to tell us who told you what. But my question for you is, when you were being told a story like the one you just told us about the McCains fighting viciously in front of the aides, how could you know that it's truth or that at least it's unbiased when obviously somebody's telling tales out of school and they know they won't get caught?
Sure. Totally fair question. The answer is, in brief, we did over 300 interviews for the book with over 200 people. The interviews were long, some 6 or 7 hours long, almost all over an hour. These are people we've known in some cases for literally 20 years, and they trusted us. They were invested in the
project. Foolish them. But go on.
They were invested in the project. They thought we were writing a serious history. But there were other reasons that maybe were a little bit less noble. There was one person we really wanted to interview for the book. It was one of the few important interviews with someone who neither John Heilman nor I knew, and so it was a stranger, and we emailed and called them, and no reply. And then before we finished the book, we signed a deal with HBO. We optioned the movie rights to them, and that appeared in the newspaper. And the next day at 7 a.m., this person called John Heilman and said, hey, HBO movie, sign me up. When do I do my interview?
Wow.
So,
and was it valuable? And did they give you dirt? Was it worth waiting for?
Oh, totally and completely.
Oh. Sarah Palin, we got to talk about that. We made fun of her. A lot of people made fun of her during the campaign. Did you get a bum rap? Were we being fair to her?
Well, there's a lot of sides of her that were not revealed publicly, and were quite a shock to me and John. We thought the main concern that the campaign had was about her, what we might call euphemistically, her narrow bandwidth.
Yeah. Go on.
No, she's a human 28K modem.
Well, look, as we point out in the book, you know, there's a reason to have sympathy for her. McCain really did her a disservice by picking her at the last minute. Without warning to her, without any preparation on the part of the campaign staff. And if you think about it, this is a woman with a lot of responsibilities before her, and the campaign didn't do very much to prepare her for that.
You are certainly nonpartisan in the dirt that you dish. Everybody has some stories about themselves that maybe they wish hadn't been told. But the one person who comes out of the book smelling pretty good is Barack Obama. And you have been accused of, what is the word, kissing up? No, that's not it. But something like that. The idea is like, oh, you know, you're being nice to the president because he's still important. These other guys are now has-beens. But you held your punches with Barack Obama. Is that true?
Well, I think if people read all of Game Change, they'll see that this is a book about primarily not a political book in the sense of it's not about polls and tactics and strategy. It's about the candidates and their spouses. And when people read the book and they see the level of dysfunction, you know that you got a lot of marital dysfunction when the Clintons have, like, the fourth most dysfunctional marriage of people in the book.
Woo! Yeah.
John and Elizabeth Edwards and Rudy Giuliani and Judith Giuliani. I think the McCains would give the Clintons a run for their money, too. The Obamas, by contrast, had a very stable marriage, as far as our reporting showed. And Obama himself, an extraordinarily cool guy in the sense of never too high, never too low, served him very well in the campaign. And when that's the focus, a guy who's a pretty normal guy comes off pretty well.
Before we move on to the game, I wanted to get, as your professional political analyst, your opinion about politics today. Let's take the Democratic Party.
Sure.
Are they more, in your opinion, like jellyfish or sea slugs?
Can I go with sea monkeys?
Well, Mark Halperin, it's a pleasure to have you. We have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
You are the one and only, and we do mean only, Prince of Ceiborga.
So you think our politicians are colorful and eccentric. Then you never met Giorgio Carbone, Prince of Ceiborga. He died in November. He spent his life trying to convince the world that his little village of Ceiborga in Italy near the French border was an independent kingdom. In 1995, he got the 300 or so residents there to vote him into the office of Prince. So we're going to ask you three questions about Prince Signor Carbone of Ceiborga and his little principality. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Ready to play?
Am I supposed to be wearing the blindfold now or not?
No. Nor are you supposed to go into the isolation booth.
All right, blindfold off, isolation booth door left ajar.
You're right. Carl, who
Why do we even have that isolation booth?
I don't know. We can't see him. It's such a pain to ship it to his apartment.
And we let him keep the door open. I mean, it's just
I live in a doorman building, so it's delivered with no problem.
Carl, who is Mark Halperin playing for?
Mark is playing for Melanie Carrick of Asheville, North Carolina.
All right. Ready to play?
I'm as ready as I'll ever be.
First question. Once he became Prince of Ceiborga, Giorgio Carbone issued stamps and created a currency, but he didn't actually do much ruling. He did pass a law once to do what? A, make the ham and cheese sandwich the official sandwich of Ceiborga. B, encourage people in Ceiborga to smoke. Or C, declare war on Antarctica.
They're so obviously all made up, and thus, by the rule of how I... able to ace my SATs, I'll go with B.
You're going to go with B. Encourage people to smoke? You're correct. Wow, you must have done well in your SATs.
I only got the questions right where the answer was B.
There you are. He was a heavy smoker himself, presumably, and didn't want to stand out in the sidewalk by himself. All right, next question. Prince Giorgio, during his reign, took the safety of Ceiborgans very seriously. How did he set out to defend his people? A, he established an army which consisted of one guy. B, he handed out slingshots to all 300 residents to be used in case of an invasion. Or C, he assigned the houses random numbers so outsiders could not find their way around.
As my niece would say, it's so A.
It's so A?
Yeah.
The one guy army?
Hmm?
You're right.
Oh.
It's like he took the whole army of one thing. He was a lieutenant, though. The guy got to be an officer, so that was exciting for him. Yeah. All right, well, I'm going to see if you can go perfect here. Let's see how accurate you are. The prince had another title. You were supposed to address him when you saw him around Ceiborga as what? A, O great leader of tininess. B, the worshipful hero of Ceiborga. Or C, his tremendousness.
Can I do it in the original
language? Yes, you can.
No, I'm saying like... I feel like...
Oh, I thought you knew it. I don't know.
Those are translations.
No.
Does anyone ever ask for the question to be repeated? All right, I'm going with B, my final answer.
B is B? Your answer is B?
Yeah.
Worshipful hero of Ceiborga? No, he was known as His Tremendousness. His Tremendousness, the Prince of Ceiborga.
Yeah.
Carl, how did Mark Halperin do in our quiz?
Mark had two correct answers, Peter, and that was good enough to win for Melanie Carrick. Congratulations.
Good work.
Mark Halperin is a senior political analyst for Time Magazine and the co-author, along with John Heilemann, of the new book, Game Change, which I recommend. Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Honored to be on. Appreciate
Great to have you. Great so to much. Talk to you. Take care. Thank you so much. One of the reasons Carl loves the Listener Limerick Challenge is because it's a part rhyme job. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Amy, national security officials appeared before Senate committees this week to discuss the attempted Christmas Day bomb attack and one immediate reform. They said, that will prevent future security failures. The State Department has now equipped its computers with software that they didn't have before. What is this software?
The State Department has
Yes. They
put
said,
the
we didn't
software?
Have this, but we've put this in now. And because we have the software, this will never happen again. We've got it all taken care of. What is the software?
They finally got, like, Google installed, running, up and running?
No, not quite that. Even more basic.
Oh, what software? Not Donkey Kong. No.
So useful in so many international terrorists.
Because, you know, our counterintelligence needs to be able to jump over barrels.
Yes. Mr. President, we now know where Wario is hanging out. Send a Predator drone. No.
All these terrorists wonder why agents are jumping on their heads.
Okay, so it's not like email. It's not. No.
It's basic.
It's basic, but not that
it'll
basic.
Make it easier to type things like Ahmadinejad, of course.
They've
Get
got.
They got consonants on the keyboard.
No.
Spell check.
Yes, spell check.
Spell check.
They've finally got spell check.
Spell check.
You know how when you misspell something, you're Googling and Google comes back and is like, "Did you mean? Did you mean Scott Brown nude?" And you're like, "No, I didn't mean that." Well, you know, it's a useful feature. It's a useful feature. Well, if you were a State Department employee searching to see if Omar Farouk Abdul Muttalib showed up in a database of U.S. visa holders a few weeks ago, and you forgot one of the 15 A's in his name, the database would be like, "Nah, never heard of him, nothing to worry about, no problem." Anyway, we've got this stuff now, so watch out, Al-Qaeda. America's got Windows 95.
And we almost know how to use it.
Anyway,
you know, I know how to find a guy like Omar Farouk Abdul Muhammad.
How do you find him?
You find out who has Googled Omar Farouk Abdul Muhammad the most times, where that person is, that's him. Tell me that these people aren't Googling themselves.
I know.
Yeah. That's also how to spell their name correctly.
It's right. Where
You know, it's a shame we didn't have the spell check back in 2003. Then we would have done what Bush really wanted and invaded Iran.
Indiana.
Yeah. PJ, the New York Times is reporting on yet another obstacle to happy relationships. Traditionally, couples fight over money or leaving the seat up, but now counselors are now dealing with more and more couples fighting over what?
About whether to pay to get the New York Times online.
I'll give you a hint. You say compost. I say compost. Let's call the whole thing off.
They are fighting about recycling?
Exactly. They're fighting over environmental sensitivity, greenness, if you will. Therapists say environmentalism is an increasing source of tension in many households.
You're not leaving a carbon footprint in this bedroom tonight.
Exactly.
I get you.
I know.
All right.
The Times tells the story of a couple in Santa Barbara. He recycles, he bikes to work, he uses reusable bags at the grocery store, but in her eyes, he falls short because he leaves the water running too long when he showers, and worst of all, when they go out for sushi, he doesn't properly quiz the waiter about the sustainability of the sea bass. Now, you probably want to fly out there yourself right now just to
and
slap
kill
them.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
But consider this. Your carbon footprint will be smaller if you just call someone in Santa Barbara and have that person slap them. So take that, Oscar.
I actually got a composting bin for Christmas from my husband.
Did you really?
Yes.
You think he's trying to tell you something?
Well, that is romantic.
Yeah.
That is romantic.
Yeah, it's awesome. He made it.
He made it.
You gotta love. Oh, come on! You gotta love that.
You do.
As opposed to jewelry.
Yeah.
You are somebody's wonderful
wife. I am. I am a dream machine.
I'm just trying to think what would happen in my house if I had bought
a
homemade compost.
You'd be in it.
You just
so
think.
Right.
I know where to put those table scraps.
Yes.
Yeah.
Three.
You know what you should do, Amy? Take the compost thing, fill it up, put a little pressure on it, like a weight, and then in about 2 million years, you'll have a diamond.
Oh, that's what he said.
Yes. Yeah.
You say either.
And you say either.
You say neither.
And you say neither.
Either.
Either.
And either.
And neither.
Let's call the whole thing off. Oh, yes. You like potato.
And you like potato.
You like tomato.
And you like tomato.
Potato.
Potato.
Tomato.
Tomato.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait@npr.org. While there, you can check out our blog, be fed by our Twitter feed, and find information about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, or on our upcoming show in New Orleans, Louisiana, on March 11th. Yes, indeed. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Jen Miller from Collingswood, New Jersey.
Collingswood, New Jersey?
Collingswood, New Jersey.
How are things in beautiful New Jersey?
Beautiful.
Yeah, come
probably
on.
Probably warmer than Chicago.
That's probably true. Well, welcome to the show, Jen. Carl Castle will now read you three news-related limericks with a last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly in two of the limericks, you'll be a winner. Ready to play?
Absolutely.
Here is your first limerick.
My teachers seem really perplexed. Once my spelling acumen I've flexed. They ought to condone frequent use of the phone. I learn literacy as I...
text.
Right. Your texting children may be stupid, but they are getting smarter. New research suggests kids who frequently use texting shorthand are improving their language skills because texting emphasizes wordplay and, quote, requires an awareness of how sounds relate to written English, unquote. Also, sending other people naked pics of yourself improves knowledge of anatomy. And constantly playing Tetris on your phone improves your ability to turn things around before putting them in holes.
That is not possible. I mean, I'm not kidding. I text my kids, and I text in complete sentences, of course, with punctuation.
Dearest daughter.
Dear daughter. Methinks. But anyway, and they text back, and it's like, K. Just a K.
Yeah.
I'm such an idiot. I was like, what is this? K, K. They're like, you know, K, okay. It's like, you can't even write O?
But they need, they're going to do something with that valuable time.
Well, I think it's great, and I'm spelling that with the numeral 8.
There you are. All right. Here, Jen, is your next limerick.
McDonald's was doing so well that I asked myself what foods to sell. My run for the border was not a tall order. I decided to found Taco
Bell.
Right. This week, we lost a man who made Americans what they are today, namely happy and obese. After failing with a McDonald's-style drive-in in 1962, ex-Marine Glenn W. Bell hit it big with his signature Mexican food chain, Taco Bell. And it wasn't until his death last week that we learned it's called Taco Bell because that was his name. Among the pallbearers at his funeral, other giants of the industry, Randy Cinnabon, Fred Lobster, and C. Phineas Hooters.
So the guy's last name was Bell.
His last name is Bell. The guy said, you can't get over that.
Carl, did your family create White Castle?
No.
No?
Could have been.
Just a thought.
All right, very good. Here is your last limerick.
I'm not trying to be a pub czar, but mommies, this goes way too far. They can't hold their liquor, and drool makes floors slicker. Keep babies away from the...
bar.
Right. An op-ed in the New York Times this week brought attention to the sensitive issue of bringing babies into bars in yuppified Park Slope, Brooklyn, where the baby-to-adult ratio exceeds that of even Nadia Suleiman's house. Bars put up signs banning strollers while moms debate which watering holes are most baby tolerant because nobody wants to slide up to a bar, take a sip from your beverage, and realize the guy next to you is enjoying his out of a breast. Resistance to babies in bars is mounting in Brooklyn as one bar goer said, look, if somebody at my local pub is going to be unable to walk and babble nonsense and occasionally throw up, I want it to be me. Carl, how did Jen do on our quiz?
Jen had a perfect game, Peter. 3 correct answers, so she wins our prize.
Well done.
All right.
Congratulations. Hey.
Thank you.
Thanks for playing.
Thank you.
Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name. And they're always glad you came. You want to be where you can see. Our troubles are all the same. Everybody knows your name.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Adam Felber and Amy Dickinson each has 3 points. Ooh. PJ O'Rourke has 2.
Ooh. Okay. PJ, you are in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. A 5.9 magnitude aftershock jolted the survivors of last week's earthquake in blank.
Haiti?
Right. According to a report released this week, the blank broke privacy laws when it improperly obtained
FBI.
Phone records. Yes. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton spoke out in support of Google's decision to stop censoring internet search results in blank.
China?
Right. No one was injured in Sweden when a floor collapsed at a blank. At a blank. You then say something. And
nude
I...
volleyball court.
No. The floor collapsed at a Weight Watchers clinic.
That is funnier than nude volleyball, yeah.
Eric Siegel, best known for writing the tear-jerking novel and film Blank, died at age 72.
Love story.
Yes.
With Al Gore.
Not quite. For the first time in 60 years, the mysterious visitor who leaves cognac and flowers at the grave of Blank
Edgar
on his birthday
Allan Poe.
Failed to do so, right? In another blow to their credibility, a recent study found that 94% of Russian bankers were outperformed in the market by Blank.
Girl Scouts selling cookies.
No, by Lucia the circus chimp. Lucia was given a choice of 30 companies in the form of colorful blocks that she could pick up with which to invest her 1 million ruble fortune. She chose 8 of them. Her portfolio increased by 300%.
And she got a $20 billion bonus from Solomon Brothers.
It's true. And she blew it all in bananas. Carl, how did PJ do in our quiz?
PJ had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 12 points, and PJ has the lead.
All right, then. We have flipped a coin. Amy is elected to go next. Here we go, Amy, fill in the blank. Nancy Pelosi said Thursday that there are no longer enough votes in the House to pass the Senate's blank bill.
Healthcare.
Right. On Thursday, President Obama proposed strict limits on the size and activities of blanks.
John Edwards.
Banks, but I like your answer. After a 4-month battle, Kraft finally succeeded in taking over blank.
Oh, Cadbury.
Right. The New York Times announced a plan to begin charging readers who read numerous articles from the paper on blank.
Line?
Yes. Robert B. Parker, the author who wrote nearly 40 books about the fictional detective blank, died at age 77.
Spencer.
Right. Royal Caribbean Cruises came under fire this week for continuing to bring vacationers to blank in spite of the recent disaster.
Haiti.
Right. The New York Knicks say that last week's loss to the Oklahoma City Thunder happened because blank.
Oklahoma City Thunder, the New York Knicks,
because
did it involve that Russian chimp?
No, it did not.
No.
They said they lost because they were staying in a haunted hotel. The Skirvin Hotel is reportedly haunted by a woman who jumped to her death back in the 30s, and that was enough to keep Knicks, Eddie Curry, and Jared Jeffries up all night, trembling with fear. The sleepy Knicks lost the game, but were relieved later when a gang of teen detectives with a big dog unmasked the supposed ghost who turned out to be former coach Isaiah Thomas.
He would have gotten away with it, too.
Yeah. If it weren't for those nosy kids. Yes. Carl, how did Amy do in our quiz?
Amy had 5 correct answers, 10 more points. She now has 13 points, and Amy has the lead.
Well done.
That didn't last long. So much for my victory lap.
All right, then. How many, then, does Adam need to win?
He needs 5 to tie, 6 to win outright.
Here we go. Fill in the blank, Adam. This is for the game. Errol Southers, President Obama's nominee to run the blank, withdrew from consideration on Wednesday.
TSA.
Right. After 4 days of wind and rain, more than 1,000 people were ordered to evacuate in blank.
Los Angeles.
Yes. California. We'll give it to you. California. On Thursday, lefty talk radio network Blank announced it was finally shutting down.
Air America.
Right. With her 7th win last Sunday, Meryl Streep set the record for receiving the most Blank awards.
Golden Globe.
Right. A burglar in Pennsylvania was caught after breaking into a home because he decided to blank before leaving.
Cook a little something.
He did. He took a shower, cut his hair, and fried some chicken and watched TV. Joining other high-tech phrases like email me and fax me, this year Chalky Sweetheart's Valentine's Day's candy has added the phrase blank.
See you later?
No. Tweet me.
Of course, of course.
The South Korean Ministry of Health has announced it will start turning off the lights early once a month to encourage workers there to blank.
Bring their own lights.
No. Go home and make babies.
Oh.
South Korea's birth rate is extremely low, so on the third Wednesday of every month, the Ministry of Health will shut off the lights in their building to encourage workers to go home and to, quote, help staff get dedicated to childbirth and upbringing.
They are going to play a little Barry White.
They're going to do that. It's
not just about the lights.
Every
right?
employee gets a Barry White CD, mm-hmm. some oysters.
Yeah. Exactly.
Carl, how did Adam do in our quiz?
He needed at least 5 to tie Peter, and he had 5 correct answers. So with 13 points, Adam Felber and Amy Dickinson are this week's
well
co-champions.
Well done.
Oh. Hard fought.
So,
hard
yeah.
fought. Battle.
So do we get to, like, arm wrestle?
Yeah.
We got to break the tie, man.
Yeah, we'll arm wrestle.
All right, go.
I'm fighting
it. While they're doing that, let me read the credits. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict what will Conan O'Brien do next. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and LendingTree, whose financial tools include Loan Coach, offering personalized advice for every step of the lending process at LendingTree.com, the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people online at WTGrantFoundation.org, and the National Association of Realtors, providing information about the Home Buyer Tax Credit at HouseLogic.com/HomeBuyerTaxCredit. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Goedeker writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Christine Fiedler. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarchik and Muhammad Mouth. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Waltrover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Von Danforth. Now, panel, what is next for Conan O'Brien? PJ O'Rourke.
He'll be funny.
Oh.
Could happen. Could
Amy
happen.
Dickinson.
Okay, this is exciting. You know that Holiday Inn thing with the bed warmers?
Yes.
He's going to sign up and be like a gigantic bed warmer.
It's a gig.
It's a gig.
Adam Felber.
In a misguided effort to escape from the cycle of giant expectation followed by double dealing and crushing disappointment, he'll join the Obama administration.
Well, if Conan O'Brien does any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to PJ O'Rourke, Amy Dickinson, and Adam Felber. Thanks to all of you, you fabulous people, for listening to us. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR.